This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hey Australia, Glenn James here. Today on the podcast, we are talking about the gender super gap, and I've got a friend of the podcast, Pascal Hellier-More, to join me today. G'day, Pascal. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Privileged to be here.
Now, you've got a couple of hats that you wear. You are a board member of the Gender Equality Council, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Yes. You also are the founder of Super Awards.
Yes.
And that's a program about, you know, putting extra money into super. And if you want to know more about what Pascal's doing there, you can just refer back. At the start of the year, we did a whole episode on Super Awards, so you can go back and eat that up there. And I might swing around at the end of this episode and just ask how you're going with that.
Sure.
But I guess I, you know, these issues, you know, there's only so much I can do with a microphone, right?
Yes.
But I think it's more around the awareness. So if we can just...
Certainly.
Highlight what's going on, highlight the data.
Sure.
Make people aware and encourage people to maybe take a different course of action.
Absolutely.
If they, you know, see inklings of these things in their life or career. Now, what are you doing at the Gender Equality Council? Maybe start by talking to us about the non-for-profit.
Sure.
What they're doing.
Yes.
And what you're seeing out there. And then we might move on to talk about some other juicy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we call it AGEC for short. So the Australian Gender Equality Council. And, you know, AGEC is really a startup as well, right? So we launched in September 2018, so 2 years ago. And we are a not-for-profit, entirely staffed by volunteers. No one gets paid. I just want to be really clear about that. And we do this at the edges of life, right? In between our other jobs and our families and so on. But essentially, we're a group of very well-connected people and you know, with access to resource and networks and so on. And it's a group of people who feel obviously very passionate about the state of gender equality or rather gender inequality in Australia. And our chair, Victoria Weeks, very senior in financial services, she instigated the whole Bring Your Daughters to Work Day many years ago. She essentially became really pissed off, pardon the French, with lack of government action, right, on this front. And so when we launched a couple of years ago, we had, you know, our launch campaign, which was tremendously successful by all accounts. So the way that we work is that we have 22 member organisations now, you know, and our member organisation might be something like Women in Super or Women in Technology or Women in STEM or, my favourite, Women in Drinks. Between our member organisations, they have reached to over 500,000 women. Now, what we do at the council is we commission or we undertake research in conjunction with the University of Queensland Business School. And we try and break down some of the myths surrounding gender equality. And then we use the report's findings or the research findings to influence government, influence corporate Australia and influence the everyday consumer to try and educate them, because the state of gender equality in Australia is parlous, right? What do I mean by that? Well, the gender pay gap sits at 14%, but if you look at total remuneration, it sits at 22%, okay? So what that means is, of course, it has significant impact for a woman's superannuation, and I know we'll come to that shortly. Another key statistic is, of course, that women do retire with 58% as much superannuation as men.
58% less.
So they retire with 58% as much or 42% less.
Right, yes. Right, yes.
Yes, sorry. Yes, yes.
Yep.
Which...
I'm basic.
Yeah. and, you know, I always like to extrapolate those stats because we hear so many stats every day. But what that means is, you know, on current trends, women retire with only enough super to live on for 6 years, but then they live another 14, right? Mm. And then a third, one of the other key planks of our launch campaign was the fact that even in Australia, we pay our daughters 26% less pocket money than we pay our sons. So this gender inequality is so ingrained culturally, right, that is it, if we're paying our daughters 26% less pocket money for doing household chores, is it any surprise that women retire with 58% as much retirement as men?
Do you think as time goes on, like you talk about women versus men, like does the Gender Equality Council, like, because it's probably more about just equality, because if someone's gender diverse or non-binary, we have to consider all people.
Yes.
And there could be, you know, the data here, and we're going to talk about the gender pay gap.
Yes.
But there could be males who are getting taken advantage of in the workforce.
Absolutely.
On an individual basis.
Absolutely.
But I guess we just need to be aware of this data.
Yes.
And so if everyone wants information, you can actually type Workplace Gender Equality Agency, and it's a government agency.
That's right.
So WGEA, they released in February at the start of the year, I think the stats from 2019. And yes, on aggregate, you know, 13.9%. is the gender pay gap.
Correct.
We'll round it up to 14, as you said.
Yep.
And the full-time average weekly earnings of men is 1751. Mm-hmm. The full-time average weekly earnings of women is $1,508.
Yes.
The lowest gap in Australia is the ACT of just under 9%.
Yes.
And the highest is Western Australia at 22%.
Yes.
And the lowest industry in terms of the gap
is
public administration and safety.
Correct.
Whatever that is. I don't know what safety is. Are we going around doing high-vis wear? And the highest is in healthcare and social services at 22%. Now, and this is the thing, Pascal, it's like I struggle to get my head around this.
Yep, sure.
Because it's so nuanced.
It is so complex.
Yep.
Like I was thinking driving here, it's like if like we can all agree, like if it leads into the super, if you work less,
yes,
you will have less money in super.
Correct.
Regardless of your gender.
Correct.
But we just need to ensure that if you are working, you're on the same playing field.
That's exactly right.
Now, the gender pay gap, what they do is they, if you haven't heard of how the government kind of commissioned these reports, any organisation that employ over 100 people have to fill out this data.
Yes.
So it's, you know, don't worry about the local fish and chip shop three people.
Yes.
So it's kind of like anything. It's a broad brushstroke, but broad brushstrokes show you trends and show you stuff that we can look at.
That's right. Yes.
And basically how they work it out, and I'll just read it because it's so interesting to know. The gender pay gap is influenced by a number of factors, including discrimination and bias in hiring and pay decisions, women and men working in different industries and different jobs, with female-dominated industries and jobs attracting lower wages.
Yes.
Woman's disproportionate share of unpaid caring and domestic work.
That's right.
Lack of flexibility to accommodate caring and other responsibilities, especially in senior roles. Women's greater time out of the workforce impacting career progressions and opportunities. So, again, it is a broad thing, but I guess the good news is it is a trend down, and in November 2014 it was kind of the peak since 1999. So we are trending down.
That's right. I mean,
I hear a butt coming.
Yeah, it is somewhat cyclical, but I think maybe if I take a step back, I think the point you were trying to make is that the gender pay gap, it does not reflect, a man and a woman doing the same role in the same company and her being paid less. No, that's correct. It does not reflect that, because that would be contravening the Equal Pay Act, which was legislated in 1969.
Yes.
The gender pay gap is an expression of women's earnings on a full-time basis versus men's weekly wage earnings.
Yeah, so I was thinking like
it's so confusing.
Yeah, in the most purest way,
yeah.
Is it best to do these surveys with people who have, male and female, who have never taken time out of the workforce just to get a benchmark? Because if I've taken 10 years out of the workforce, I might not have the experience, I might be behind in technology, I'm going to be behind naturally, maybe, in a selection process.
Yes.
And that's what I mean, like I know one thing. Whenever we pick up these microphones, I can't please everyone and I insult a lot of people, but I think the thing we need to highlight, as I said at the start, it is nuanced and we just need to be aware. So if you do employ people, and there's a lot of people that employ people that listen to this podcast.
Yes.
Don't you bloody dare pay someone less because of their gender.
No.
Forget the awards.
Exactly.
Don't be a scumbag in your private business.
That's
and
right.
And go, well, we don't have awards. We just pay above the minimum wage so we can pay whatever.
That's right.
Pull your freaking head in and look after people.
Yes, exactly. But the other thing to recognise, and when you were talking about the different sectors, so it's lowest in Australia in ACT. That's because it's government, right?
Exactly.
And so they're not going to contravene their own law, right? But Western Australia, well, you know.
And Western Australia, like I know more FIFO miners that are male than female.
Exactly, which brings me to my next point, which is the gender pay gap, varies between sector. So, mining is one of the worst sectors in terms of the gender pay gap, as is financial services. Financial services is persistently and repeatedly the worst offender on this front with a gender pay gap on average of like 31%. Which doesn't really move over time. And you think to yourself, well, how is that possible when we've got so increasing awareness, to your point, but it's because there are fewer and fewer women working full-time in financial services compared to men.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like it is, someone might be thinking, oh, what are you talking about this for? I'm here to talk about super.
Yeah.
Well, it's material because if you earn less and you work less, you will have less money in your super.
Yes. Yes.
Like that's fact.
Absolute fact. And I'm going to share some stats with you around workforce participation because, of course, this is also a huge influencer in the gender super gap. So if let's think about the population of women in the accumulation phase, right? So age 18 to 64 in Australia, 7 million, give or take. Of the 7 million, only 24% are in full-time work. 24%. Mm. And compared to men, there's 48% of men who are full-time work.
Is that a
And then I'll just share some more stats on the women.
That. And I'll just add that Pascal, she does not have any pen or paper. She's just walked in. And
I've got
kicking ass and taking names. And
that's right. And then if we continue to think about that cohort of women, so 24% work full-time, 36% work part-time or casually, because they're juggling families and so on, 40% are not in the workforce. And, I mean, you were talking earlier about the haters and can't please everyone, et cetera, and my goodness me, I've been trolled as well on socials for this. But, and it's typically around this point that a troll would come in and say, well, women just need to work. Women do work. So with the 40% of women who are not in the workforce, sure, absolutely, some of them can afford not to work. Happy days, fantastic. But for a large number, a lot of women do want to be in paid employment, but either they have cultural responsibilities where they're expected to stay at home and look after the kids or the family or the community, or the cost of childcare is actually actively pricing them out of returning to work. So and I'll just share another stat with you. So the cost of two children in full-time childcare, so Johnny and Jane, full-time childcare, the cost of that is actually greater than the average woman's full-time salary. So if you're considering, if you've got Johnny and Jane and you're considering going back to work, you want to, but then you do the maths and you go, hang on, I'm going to be sending the family backwards. If I go back to work,
It's a non-starter.
It's a non-starter, right?
But I mean, it's that kind of, and I can't speak on behalf of anyone other than me. I can barely do that.
on a good day, yeah.
But it's that kind of, it's like, it's a no-brainer that you need to stay at home and care for the kids because it's actually cheaper.
Sure.
Or whatever. But it's like, there's that. Because I'm asking questions that I know people will be thinking as well. So I'll just throw it out there.
Yeah.
No one's making anyone start a family.
No.
So we have to lay in the bed we make for ourselves.
Yes.
And I know my sister particularly struggled with this from a, she had Grace, then 2 years later had twins And, you know, 3 years out of the workforce, she was, her brain was mushing up and she was sick of talking Wiggles. So
100%.
It was that issue. It's like, how do I get out of the house and talk to an adult? So I totally get it.
Yeah.
But for a period of our life,
yeah,
we have to lay in the bed we make. But also, like, there's not everyone who's in a household unit with multiple partners. There's single mums listening. There's single
Absolutely.
Dads listening.
Yep.
So I guess I'm saying I don't know if there is an answer other than there are a lot of situations that suck.
Yes.
And if you are in one of those situations, yes, I want to encourage you. We are here to encourage you. Like, yep, just hang in there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm just talking.
I get it.
Yeah.
Right? And I've been in your sister's shoes. And here's the thing. You know, I was in corporate, Australia, earning a very nice salary. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I was pretty literate about super because I used to write the brochures on super. So I probably knew more than most.
Yeah.
But at no point of my, and I speak like you, I speak personally, but I can speak for my first circle of friends as well. At no point in my, family planning journey, if we want to call it that, with my husband, did I stop to think what this would mean for my super. Mm. And if I didn't think of it, who else is going to think of
it? Yeah.
So, yes, I accept that it is a choice to have children, but no, A, you don't do the maths because we don't talk about superannuation generally, and B, you know, of he and I was the only one that could have a family. Like I was the only person that could actually have the, you know, had the right equipment.
it's pretty much stating the obvious, but until like your kids are in primary school,
yeah,
it's a fluid week by week situation most
oh
of the time.
Oh my lord, fluid.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything.
AKA
but
chaos. But yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
It might be one of those things, particularly if one of the spouse wants to stay at home and
yep,
is the higher income owner,
yep,
that can be some big structural changes in terms of where we live, how we live.
Yep. All of the above. All of the above. So, you know, what I really think needs to happen, and this is speaking personally, this is not on behalf of the council, is that we need to find, as a country, right, we can't have 40% of 51% of the population not in the workforce. Right. And you know how the US do it? So our number in Australia, just to remember, the proportion of women in full-time work is 24%. In America, that's closer to 50%. Good Lord, you say, how do they do it? Guess what? They tie Social Security payments to full-time work.
Mm.
And they also have a different childcare model. So childcare is more affordable. Women want to go back or have – are not priced out of returning to
work. Probably less regulated in the States, the childcare, so it's cheaper.
probably. So, you know, there's a few things that I think we need to do as a country to, you know, remove the barrier for women, the economic barrier for women returning to work. Is that to make childcare tax deductible? Now, I have actually made that suggestion to Treasury, and this was a few years ago, and there was a lot of, you know, sucking of teeth and it's very expensive. Was the comment I got, well, you know, to have that proportion of your population not in the workforce is also very expensive.
It's kind of like I see childcare and I'm going out on a big limb here, so hang in there, people.
Go, Glenn.
You know, like we, for our society to function, we need to, if there's a fire, we pick up the phone and the fire brigade come. For our society to function, we pick up the phone if we're having a medical emergency, the
yes,
ambulance comes.
Yes.
Okay. We pick up the phone if we're getting robbed and the police come. Although I called the police once when there was a domestic violence case next door.
Yeah.
I called the local police station. They said, oh, you're better off just to call 000. Like they didn't care. Anyway.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, thanks. Confidence.
Thanks, guys.
But okay, as a society to run,
yeah,
I see education is important.
Yes.
And childcare is in that as well.
Yes.
Not necessarily the we're sending
it's
our
a separate
2 year
segment
old to learn
yep
English,
yep,
but it allows the parents to be financially strong because they can go and earn money. Yep.
That's
so
exactly
it's
right.
Strong parents, strong families.
Yes.
Strong individual, strong family.
Yeah.
I'm so beyond the scope of my expertise talking about this stuff, but I just think, yeah, back to my comment about you know, because I want to be clear, I'm not having a go at everyone for having family, but before you make the decision to start a family,
yeah,
you just have to look at the financials and plan for it somehow.
Yes.
And there's no right or wrong time to start a family. My thing is, if you're up to your eyeballs in debt and maybe you can see a way out of the credit card debt and the personal loan debt within the next 2 years, sure, it might be comfortable just to hold off 10 minutes, clean the debt up.
Yep.
But if you're like, all right, well, we're in a frigging financial mess for the next 8 years, you're not bloody waiting. So everyone's situation's different.
Absolutely.
The only other thing I would say, like the government, you know, paid parental leave.
Yes.
You often wonder whether they need to have an SG portion in that.
Yeah.
That goes on top. It's just a deemed amount that goes into super.
I think it should be, right?
Because so, yeah, I mean, it's a complex discussion and, again, we don't have any...
There's no silver bullet.
There's no silver bullet.
No.
So...
Other than awareness.
Awareness, yeah. Yep. So we acknowledge the gender pay gap in any form. And when all this gender pay gap thing really started to come to light, I must live in a bubble because I didn't see it. So, you know, I had clients, you know, they were both working there, like two clients, same job, same hospital, both on the same award.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's different just from me learning about this crap.
Yep.
Yeah, the award's cute. Not everyone uses the award. Like government will use the award, or if you want to pay the award,
yeah.
The award doesn't say pay chicks this, pay guys that.
Yeah.
But again, it is nuanced with when you're out of that award in the free market.
Yeah.
The free market is where people get taken advantage of.
Yes.
I'm not a socialist by any means, but I think we have a responsibility to have an equal playing field.
Absolutely.
So the gender super gap.
Yes.
Let's talk some stats, particularly around super balances, and then I'm probably just going to share with Pascal some things that I've looked at of how to kind of boost our super.
Yes.
And to be honest, this kind of stuff with the gender super gap, when I talk about money, I'm really talking about looking after, if it's a family unit and there's a spouse that's staying home, male, female or other, it doesn't really matter that it's male or female. But we just need to pay attention. If someone's taking time out of the workforce, I think the shoe can fit there as well. Do you want to give us a TED talk around the super gap stats?
Sure. So the super gap, as we touched on before, so women retire with 58% as much or 42% less. And those stats come from ASFA, superannuation account balances by age and gender, October 2017. Check it out. But the where we land and the reason that the super gap occurs is for a combination of the factors we've just already covered. So the gender pay gap, time out of the workforce, and then the type of work women do, because far more women do part-time and casual work compared to men. So all these things add up. And what this means is that on current trends, half of women age 65 are retiring with no super. So 50% of women age 65 and up retire with no super. And that's partly because they were on the cusp of super, like being in the workforce or stepping out when super was introduced. Super was, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
In other shocking statistics, so 40% of single women retire into poverty. Now, if you think about the fact that one in three women in Australia enters retirement single, then we can extrapolate and say, okay, well, that overall number becomes one in six women.
What's the definition of poverty when you reference that? Is that living on a government pension only?
Yes, at best.
Yeah.
So there's sometimes the pension is obviously, there are a number of complicating factors like your assets, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, let's just go with government pension.
Yeah. Yep. So a lot of the older clients that I've had, it's like this goal. I've paid tax all my life. I'm getting my bloody pension. I'm like, oh, well, if you want to aim for 30 grand a year, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't go far.
Absolutely not. Like 30 grand a year is – and it assumes home ownership.
Yeah.
Which is a big, big, big trap for young players, because if you can barely afford to keep the lights on and you're eating baked beans and maybe there are a couple of, low budget holidays each year at best, none of that is going to happen if you also have to pay rent and or mortgage.
Yeah, there's a slightly higher rate for non-homeowner, but I mean, either or, if you're relying only on the pension,
yes,
it might be tight if you've come off an 80K income.
Yeah.
To retire.
Yeah.
I guess that's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
So just jumping back to more stats around the super gap. So the fastest growing demographic of homeless people in Australia, because we all tend to think of homeless men sleeping rough on the street or so on, but it's actually the 55 year old woman and up. That's the fastest growing demographic of homeless people. And the reason for that is because similarly, superannuation was introduced, she stepped out of the workforce and he said, don't worry about going back to work, I'll look after you. So she stayed home, looked after the children, sort of done the right thing kind of thing. And then in early 50s, there's some kind of marital breakdown and while the theory says that she should get half the assets, often it doesn't actually work out that way. So she finds herself, couch surfing or living in a van or whatever. And the reason that we don't see, and there's quite a lot of media about this, the reason that we don't see these women sleeping on the streets is because there's a different sense of
pride.
There's shame,
yeah,
right?
Shame,
there's shame. Pride, so they will couch surf rather than live rough, that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, wild. Now, I guess I wanted to just kind of talk financially. If somebody was, and I'll just use a basic example. There's three ways of getting extra money into a non-working spouse's super.
Yes.
Okay. The first one I'll talk about is, they call it contribution splitting. So effectively, broad brushstroke, and you can just search ATO contribution splitting and they give examples. It's clear. It's really easy to understand. But basically what you do is, at the end of the financial year, if someone was earning 60K plus super, there would be 5,700 per year going into the super fund before tax, okay? What you can do at the end of the financial year, you can fill out the ATO form, send it to your super fund, mm-hmm. and say, I want to contribute, and you can do up to 85% of the SG contribution into my spouse's super. Mm-hmm. So for example, I'll go on because I've kind of worked out if we did a combination of these three things for 3 years, if there was a non-working spouse that wanted to take 3 years off the workforce, I've just kind of painted this. Again, you've got to have the spare money to do the other two because if you're on 60 grand, it's going to be pretty tight anyway.
Yeah.
But I've just used that just as a nominal example.
Yeah.
So contribution splitting, end of the financial year, you can elect, the main superannuant can elect to split a contribution that they've received in their super account to a spouse's account, mm-hmm. up to 85% of what went in. Now, there are some nuanced things, and the older you get in terms of financial planning strategy, it might be different because you might want to put more in the spouse's account if they're older to get money out of super sooner.
Yes.
You might want to load up the younger person's super to get the older person age pension strategy. So, again, everything's nuanced and it's not personal advice. So, I've used the example, if we did $2,500 for 3 years, mm-hmm. that's $7,500
yep.
in the spouse's super account.
The non-working spouse.
Yep. And that's without putting any of your own money in.
It's pretty good.
Even if you did 50% while there was a non-working spouse.
Yeah.
I mean, this contribution splitting, it is a thing that no one talks about in the financial advice industry.
You never hear it.
You never hear it.
No.
Never hear it. It's just a really good way to level out some contributions between the spouses.
Yes.
So that's the first one, contribution splitting, check out the ATO. The second one is it's the co-contribution, so it's the government co-contribution. Yes. So basically, if you earn under 40 grand at the moment and it's 39,837 a year, you can put, the government will match your contribution 50% up to $500. So the long and the short of it is, if you put $1,000 into your super fund and you were earning under 40K, mm-hmm. you would get $500 from the government.
Yep.
So $1,500 per year can go into that super fund. Again, if we did that for 3 years, $4,500.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the next one might, you know, I don't know if it would work too much on this. You'd have to have a bit of money floating around if you're earning the $60,000 for this one, because things will get bloody tight if you're starting a family. But go with me, everyone. The spouse contribution, basically what you do is, if the spouse earns under 40K a year, the lower earning spouse or the non-working spouse, and you put $3,000 into the super fund, the higher earner spouse or the one that contributed, quote unquote, will get a $540 tax offset. So they get, basically, the donor spouse gets an 18% tax offset on their tax return, mm-hmm. up to $540. Mm-hmm. So the kind of top end of it is, you put $3,000 in the super fund,
yep.
the donor spouse gets a $540 tax offset, which is probably nominal anyway, but we'll take what we can get.
Yes.
So if we did $3,000 a year for 3 years, that's $9,000, right?
Yep.
So if there was a bit of money laying around, you know, you might have lined your ducks up pretty well, you know, had an offset account or paid down the mortgage or mm-hmm. had some good savings behind you or whatever before you started a family, or if somebody was taking time out of the workforce, there are ways to boost the lower income earner super.
Yes.
So what I did, if we did all three for 3 years,
yes,
the net wash up would be the spouse would have $21,000 more in their super. Okay. The cool thing is, I just put it in. I went to the MoneySmart calculator, and you can do this yourself.
Yes.
Not including tax and inflation. So give me grace there, everyone.
Yes, yes.
Not including the $21,000, but just the investment return off that $21,000 over 30 years would be $208,000.
Nice.
So, again, if you did half of that, it's 100, you know, it could be 100 grand.
Exactly.
So, again, this awareness piece, it's just there are options with putting money in the lower income earner or the spouse who's not at the workforce for a period of time.
Exactly. And all of those options you just set out, it's not like you can do one but not the other. You can do all three.
You can do all three.
Yeah.
You can do one or the other. Mm-hmm. I love this contribution splitting, because it's a way to do it that doesn't impact your personal cash flow.
Yes.
So if the higher income owner was on 100 grand and there was 10 grand going to their super, every year fill out a form, you both have to sign it and send 5 grand over to the spouse's other super. Done. Happy Shut days. Up. See you later.
Yeah.
You're out of a job, Pascal. I'm taking over. Let's do this, baby. So again, I want you to get advice on your own situation, number one.
Number one.
And that could be talking to your financial advisor. And a lot of you have a relationship with a financial advisor because you are starting a family. You need bloody life insurance. Sorry, I get passionate. I've had people die and leave families behind. So, check the ATO website out. Contribution splitting, co-contribution and spouse contribution. Those three pages on the ATO website. Really easy. There are examples. You could probably do it all yourself, but I'll always say get advice.
Exactly.
So
that's huge.
Yeah.
All those three things, huge.
Yeah. And, you know, what if we just did it over a 3-year period?
Yeah. Doesn't have to be forever.
If the lower income earner does go back to work, the threshold's 40 grand.
Oh, right.
So they all work if the lower income earner is earning up to 40 grand. So it is possible. And that's why it's just so important to build your financial life without friggin' personal loans without freaking after pay. You gotta have your house in order.
Yes.
Because things are easier to manage.
Yeah.
And that's not even looking at salary sacrificing.
No.
Like putting extra money, quote unquote, in.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think on that whole concept of spousal splitting, and I say this playing devil's advocate just because I've been trolled on this myself, when there are, of course, there's a segment of people who say, oh, spousal splitting, why would I do that? It's my money, I've earned it, yada, yada, yada. And I think when, you know.
Well, with that attitude, piss off, go and be single.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't want someone to, you know, run the house and raise the kids, then good luck to you. But what I would say on that is, you know, and particularly with gender equality, you know, a lot of people get really worked up and go, oh, you know, women's sort of betterment, like, you know, redressing these inequalities must come at men's expense. And I could not disagree more. I take the view that, okay, if everyone is better off in, you know, in wealth and health and in retirement, guess what? The better we all do as a society, because, you know, if we don't have women retiring into poverty, and if we don't have men retiring into poverty, then there's less load on the government. Mm. And guess what? If there's less load on the government, then there's less load on the taxpayer. So actually it's in everyone's, in, you know, best interests to try to strive for a more gender equal society.
Yeah, I'd rather get my income long term from my own control rather than having to fill out a Centrelink form every 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So anyway.
So there you go. Lots of options. It's just raising the awareness this Super September.
Yes.
Also, if you've got multiple super funds with multiple insurances, go to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help. I can introduce you to an advisor who can review your insurances, because you don't want to roll your super over and cancel insurances if you don't have adequate cover. You need to look at your fees. I wouldn't suggest you'd want to pay more than 1% in super fees. Again, I'm not setting market prices, but just a broad brushstroke. Really just pay attention.
Yes.
If you look at index fund options inside your super, it's going to be cheaper. But really just Super September is about a pulse check.
Yes.
You, once a year you pay attention to your super, it is September.
Yes.
It's a bit of a nothing month anyway.
Yeah.
Well, this whole 2020 is a bit of a nothing year.
What the hell happened? Yeah.
I know. It's so funny. Well, yeah, because when we last sat down.
I know.
It was in end of January, start of February. Yeah. I went to the States.
That's right.
Got home. It was March and COVID hit. So I.
You were so lucky to get home.
Yeah. I know. It was
really, you could still be there.
I know. Thanks for having the chat. Now just give us an update. How's Super Awards going?
Really well. Yeah, really, really well. So we're in partnership with a number of super funds. So that's pretty exciting. I can't disclose any just yet.
Ooh.
So we're building an API to be basically to license our technology to super funds. So put very simply, what that means is that you will, if you're in one of those funds, you will come to your super fund to do your online shopping and other things.
It's almost like a member benefits play.
Yeah, to earn super. So you come to your super to earn super.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the very basic value proposition. So that's been keeping us all very busy, as you can imagine.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, so Super Awards, check out the other episode we did at the start of the year, because it is a deep dive.
And absolutely.
It's, you're shopping anyway, so why not get cash back and put it in your super fund?
Exactly. And COVID has, you know what, I feel COVID has been the kick in the pants that Australia has needed from an e-commerce perspective to just get us all online where we weren't.
Mm.
So prior to COVID, the proportion of online shopping as a function of retail sales was 9%. Post-COVID, it's now sitting at 12%. I'm actually surprised it's not higher, but but we've seen a remarkable step change as a nation, because guess what? We've had to do it.
I'm obviously not the only one, but I kind of know the three couriers now.
The different first
companies.
Name basis.
Well, actually, I know the postman, because Australia Post put things in the motorbike and he'll drive up to the driveway and give it to me. I know like the toll guy, the couriers now or whatever it is, Star Trek. It's, it's been pretty fun.
Yep, absolutely. And I sometimes, you know, the door goes and it's a courier and I'm thinking, oh, I can't remember what I ordered.
No. So there you go. So remember, everyone, jump on to Instagram. There's some posts up there around super. Do the super health check.
Yes.
And, yeah, again, I can't stress enough that looking at the contribution splitting, because that's an easy one for a family unit to shuffle some money across to the other super fund.
Yes.
I mean, there are some things, you know, the receiving partner can't have more than 500 grand in their super and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's not going to really affect anyone. But it is a magical bit of legislation.
Yes.
That is out there.
Yep.
And if you think my super's mine, he or she can piss off, well, I would suggest you've got bigger problems because you're in the relationship or you're not.
Exactly.
You know,
is this a partnership or is it?
They can have my time. They can have my sperm or my eggs. Yep. They can have my same bed. We can share a house, but they can't have my money.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's
just
crazy.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
But sadly, true.
Mm. I want to bookend that because the more I talk, the more I get myself in danger. I totally get it if, you know, I've heard of people in relationships that have little emergency stashes and escape funds and all that.
Yep.
You know, because I don't know the situation of a lot of family units. So, yeah, go easy on us. But we're just having a chat here, everyone.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Pascal, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451-289.